welcome to the Fordcast, a Harrison Ford podcast. This week, we're talking about my favorite Star Wars movie, which is weird because people mainly hate it.
And this is Lauren Milberger, co-host, and we'll be talking about a movie that I don't particularly enjoy.
Welcome to Lauren Does What She's Supposed To, and I somehow fuck it up. I'm Rachel, but we're talking about Return of the Jedi, which is
AKA
my favorite.
Revenge of the Jedi.
What?
It was originally called Revenge of the Jedi.
And then they decided Revenge of the Sith was a good...
Well, I think that's where they took it from. Because by that time, I'm sure George Lucas had much more control. But they felt Revenge was just like a little too harsh.
Yeah. Because it's Return. They come back.
They do.
And then they go away again. Because that's all Star Wars is.
And then come back 30 odd years later.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
So what's your personal stories about Return of the Jedi?
I have Wicket on my bed.
You do, which we've spoken about.
I have a stuffed Wicket. I love Return of the Jedi because I saw it when I was little. And it's the How I Met Your Mother theory that
you'll see on the list. I wanted us to talk about that. That's one of my favorite theories.
It depends how you feel about Return of the Jedi depends on when you saw it. So like for me, I saw all the Star Wars when I was young. Like I was really, really little. So I liked it because they look like teddy bears. So I love all of the Ewoks.
Well, what's interesting those of you who do not know How I Met Your Mother, go watch it. But Barney,
skip
the character,
the final episode.
Yeah, actually, you should probably go on the DVD or Netflix and watch the revised version of it,
because which ends as it should end. How I Met Your Mother. Oh, it made me so mad because I am.
And you know, and usually I'm very like, you know what, that was the person's vision. I'm okay with it.
It's
not
a
so
bad
much
bad vision.
But anyway, Barney, played by Neil Patrick Harris, he makes the distinction at 10 years old, which is interesting, right? He says that if you're 10 or younger, or if you're 10 or older, then you're 10 or older, you did not like the Ewoks, and it can figure
Which
out
is,
your age.
Well, okay, that is true to a degree. If you're like me, like I'm an animal person. I love animals. I love furry things. Like if you see me walking down the street and there's a puppy, I'm the person that even with headphones on and the like owner can clearly hear me, I'm like, "Whoa, puppy!" Like I like say it out loud. And so,
well, it's a generalization and it's a joke, but you see it and you go, you laugh because you're like, yes, that actually makes total sense.
It does. I think if you're like an animal person or you like teddy bears, like I still have teddy bears. Like I've collected them since I was a kid. Like I love bear, like fuzzy stuffy things. Then you'll like the Ewoks.
Well, it's interesting to sort of just digress for a little bit that apparently Return of the Jedi was when he had just adopted his daughter, I think, or around his time his daughter was very young, Lucas. His first daughter was a very young age. And they didn't want to make Ewok dolls. Like stuffed plush dolls. And he was like, I don't care. I want one for my daughter. I don't care if no one buys them. You make them.
Yeah. And it was great. And that's why I have Wicket on my bed.
Well, for me, for Return of the Jedi, I definitely saw it when I was very young. I cannot remember even if I saw it before I saw Empire, how old I was. But the distinct memories for me is I'm kind of indifferent about the Ewoks. Like I don't hate them. I never had a dog growing up. I don't know. But
Rachel, are you sneaking food? To get my pound cake onto the table.
It would have been fine if Rachel hadn't like looked at me and I was like, what? What? Is something on my face?
No, I'm just trying to get my pound cake.
I am old enough or older than Rachel to have had the little figures. Although I guess they still made them, right? They continue to make the figures or I don't know. But we had
the first Star Wars thing I ever had was I had the lightsabers that came out in like the 90s mm-hmm. that all of the kids had. And then now I'm eating the pound cake. But I was Padme Amidala in the third grade for Halloween.
We got to get a picture of that.
Oh, it's somewhere. Cause I had my lazy eye. Cause I refused to wear glasses. I have a lazy eye, but you can't ever tell cause I wear contacts. Mm-hmm. But when I was little, I couldn't wear contacts. And so I was always so particular about Halloween. Where it's like I had to look like who I was dressing like. I couldn't be a knockoff
version. Oh, I was the same way.
So I made my sister-in-law make sure every single light on the bottom of my dress was lit up at all times.
Oh, how cool.
And then I wouldn't wear my glasses.
Oh, no.
I had a lazy eye. And we were bobbing for apples because my birthday's around Halloween. And so I had an all-white face. I was in white face. Like bobbing for apples as Padme. And like there's pictures of it like running down my face. It was a disaster. But that was like the first Star Wars thing I actually had, other than.
Well, my brother's best friend who lived down the street had like everything, and he had the Ewok village. So that was a really big deal, was for us to go over with, like, we had Vader for some odd reason. That must have been my brother's. I had Hoth Leia. I can't think of anyone else. I feel like we might have had someone else. I don't know why we didn't have Han, but they were expensive. And it was great because we could go over to his house and he had all of them, and he had the Ewok village. So we were able to like play on it. Like, he even had the little net that everyone gets like caught in, and it was so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that you could like put the figures in the net, or you could put C-3PO in the net for Empire when he was like on Chewbacca's back. And it was such a big deal. And actually recently I asked him, cause he has kids. I was like, do you still have all the figures and the Ewok village? And he's like, oh, I wish. No, I don't have them anymore. And it was so sad.
You're like, oh man, you're an adult and I'm asking you.
I know. He appreciated it. Cause he's got, you know, two kids, but, again, I can't remember what order I saw them in, but I do know that I definitely saw Jedi before I saw the original Star Wars, because I remember as a kid watching it and being very confused why it was obvious, even at that young age, that they were making Luke, who was her brother, Leia's love interest. And it was weird to me. There's a lot of stuff about these movies that as a kid, I even was like, hey, wait a second, that's wrong.
Well, that's what's funny is my one friend just watched them for the first time.
Oh, interesting what they say.
And she had no idea, like, like, she didn't know anything.
Did she know about Vader?
It.
Cause I feel like that's the biggest, like, I'm your father.
I don't think so. I don't remember.
Wow. That's really clustered.
But she was doing it in machete order and she goes, she goes, I'm so confused. People keep being like, just watch it in machete order. And I don't know why.
So machete order is watching it. The original run, right?
No.
Oh,
machete
it's not.
Order is you do 4 and 5. You do maybe 1 if you feel like it. So you do 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 6.
Oh.
So then you don't know that Luke and Leia are twins until Revenge of the Sith,
but you know,
at the
that,
very end.
But you know that Vader is Luke's dad. So
yeah,
it's like a flashback thing.
So yeah, so what it does is it's
that's
like
cool.
You watch Star Wars, you watch Empire, you discover that that's his dad, you go back and discover the origin of Darth Vader.
Oh, I love this.
And then the very end of Sith, you find out that they were twins and they were Luke and Leia, and then you go back and watch when they discover that they're twins.
I might do this because in full disclosure.
Because you have no idea what happens in Star Wars.
I know, but the audience may not know this, but Rachel knows this, is that I've only seen episode 1 of the prequels. I haven't really seen this second and third
hold
one.
Hold on, you're missing the best monologue of all time.
But that's the thing. Because of GIFs on Tumblr and because I love to read the Wikipedias to find out things I don't know.
Where Anakin Skywalker says, I hate sand. It gets everywhere.
There's that, or the volcano, I hate you.
No, that scene, when I was younger, made me so upset.
Well, one of my favorite things to do for some reason is I have this picture that was like a... is it meme or meme? Whatever, right? I don't know.
Meme,
thank you.
And it's a GIF.
Did I say GIF?
Yes.
Oh my God, the internet is going to hate me.
No, it's okay. Me and my friend had a fight about that the other day. Because I say
okay,
GIF,
so it's not just me. Awesome. That is Anakin and Ben Kenobi, or I guess Obi-Wan, which... doing the research for Jedi, a lot of the stuff like the volcano and everything, like Lucas had it. Like there's a couple little changes like Padme being dead, but it's like he had this idea fully formed in his head. Mm-hmm. So what's your favorite part of Return of the Jedi?
I think the really awkward kiss between Han and Leia.
What awkward kiss?
He literally grabs the sides of her face and then like...
oh, wait, when he gets unfrozen from the carbonite?
No, that one's fine. When they're in the Ewok village and he looks...
oh, it is
like,
sort of a bit awkward. It
so
is sort
weird.
Of weird, yeah.
And I just think it's so funny.
The whole thing is weird. I mean, some of the stuff that I was reading was that in the story meetings with Kasdan and a bunch of people, they kept telling him, you're making Han and Leia really insignificant and they have nothing to do. But it was like he was so obsessed with Luke and it was all about Luke. In fact, when Harrison read the script, which... apparently they didn't
groan. Sorry, because I don't care about Luke Skywalker.
I know, and it shows with Empire that we didn't even talk about him. But here's the thing: I actually am interested in Luke in the new movies because he's going to be more interesting to me and not perfect. And I'm really actually super excited about what's going to happen to Luke. But in these movies, he's just so, as my friend would say, Melba toast. Like he doesn't really do much for me personally.
Oh, vocabulary word over here.
No, boob tube. If Kevin's listening, that's really, he doesn't have a large vocabulary, and I can make fun of him for that because it'll just, you know, dog at him right now. No, he's not listening.
SAT word.
He'll never listen to this. but yeah, and I think that's why, but sort of going back was they didn't get the scripts literally until they arrived and they had to sit in a room. In fact, Mark Hamill said that he's not a fast reader and he was really like, kind of like, oh, I gotta sit in a room and finish this. And there were actually fake scenes and he was told what scenes were fake because most of them were his scenes, I assume. So Harrison went to a room and read it and then went like, oh, I get it. You like Luke. I'm cool. That's all right. I'm okay. Like he got it. He's like, all right, you like him. I get it.
Lame.
Yeah. But then again, I mean, should we go into the whole thing about him wanting Han to die?
I mean, I think everyone, that's kind of been like overtold.
It has, but I actually have some new information that I think is really interesting and I kind of wanted to throw it at you.
Oh wait, throw it at me because I want to see if it's new and I don't know it.
Okay, so in my research, the thing that really surprised me that I feel like people don't bring up when they say, oh, he wanted him to die and that's why, spoiler, you know, it happened in the new one and he's all cool about it and all this sort of, you know, sort of Mishigas stuff, is something that I didn't realize that they don't talk about. Yes, I used Yiddish.
That was great. Sorry. All this Mishigas, I was like, what the fuck is that?
Do you need me to explain what it means?
If you feel inclined to. But
craziness.
Oh, boy. Didn't say craziness. You're just like, I'm going to throw in my Yiddish. You're just SAT and Yiddish over there today.
I'm really sorry, Rachel, and I'm really, really sorry to break it to you, but I'm Jewish. Mm-hmm. I know this is hard. I know that you didn't know, but yeah, I know. Shocking, isn't it?
All right, Milberger.
Anyway, so, okay, so through all of this that he's saying things like, you know, I feel like there's no emotional weight. I feel like there needs to be a self-sacrifice. He didn't know that he got together with Leia at the end. He didn't know that Luke and Leia were siblings. So mm-hmm. his big sort of like caveat on that was, I have no parents. I have no story. I don't get the girl in the end. Just let Carrie and Mark get their, you know, do get resolve their thing together. And I think that's a big point. I mean, yes, he didn't have much to do. He doesn't care about the size of his part. You know, he's very cool, very amicable, but he was a big star by now. He had other things to do and he was sort of done with it. So I think it was a combination of that. Another reason why I'm really happy that he got to have this amazing experience with The Force Awakens, because now the last sort of taste in his mouth is a positive one about the character and about what happened.
Mm-hmm. And when he comes back.
Yes, when he comes back.
Because he's not dead.
It's going to be all about Han Solo. So I think that's interesting. I think that's something that people don't put into account and has been lost in the story, is that he had no clue until literally they filmed that scene and they did the Ewok stuff last. So near the end of filming, he, through most of the movie, I'm guessing, he didn't know that he got the girl. So he's actually really shocked when she tells him. I mean, he knew, but like, that he got the girl at the end.
Yeah, because George Lucas doesn't know how to tell people shit.
What do you mean?
Like, George Lucas has all this shit planned and doesn't tell anybody. Which I'm like, okay.
But they did that on purpose.
Which I get. Like, but as an actor, it's like, okay, that means you're not trusting your actors to, like, be able to act. Like, you're just kind of being like,
but
I'm not telling you the story, so then you're surprised.
I think by this time it wasn't about that. It was about leaks. And it's not even just about, well, I'm going to give this to you and maybe you're going to accidentally, I trust you, but not the crew members. Or, I mean, David Prowse was leaking stuff left and right, who was the stand-in for Vader, not obviously you know, Earl Jones was
no,
in the costume.
Was. Yeah, no, so, he was Vader.
Yeah, David but Boston. I'm saying not the voice.
Voice.
If people,
no, he
if
was
people
Vader,
are confused
though.
And don't know his name.
Yeah, he was Scottish. That's actually a fun story. He, like, would say Vader's lines mm-hmm. because obviously James Earl Jones just did voiceover and then they
he
put
was
it in
Scottish
after.
Scottish, I thought he was,
no,
like, Midlands or
no,
something.
He's very Scottish, according to my brother. He could be wrong, but...
Because they called him Farmer Vader, right? Vader Farmer?
I don't know. All I know is that... It's funny if you try and watch videos where it's like not James Earl Jones, because it's like, Luke, I am your father. Like, it's like, you're like, what? What's going on? Like, this is weird. Because you're like so used to like seeing that image and hearing James Earl Jones.
Well, that's like there's a video from Empire of Peter Mayhew talking his lines in English. And it's fantastic.
Oh, I saw that.
We will have to post that like on the social media and stuff. But anyway, that's my thought. I think that it's misunderstood because people don't realize that he didn't know that he got the girl in the end.
Well, I think a lot of that kind of stuff is misunderstood. Like,
Well, you know, at a context, also, you know, years have passed and things are, you get the top end of a quote, not the letter of the quote where it's explained.
Well, that's why I like, this is kind of the reverse, but that's like with all the Jared Leto stuff, people are like, oh, well, you're only getting like certain sides of the story. And I'm like, so you're taking like, words are hard today. So there's like a lot of in Hollywood where people will take quotes or certain things that happen on sets and they like blow that story out of proportion. But now it's turning to the point where we're like, oh no, don't victimize this guy. And it's like, well, no, Jared Leto should be victimized. And like, there's so many different accounts, but now it's like flipping how we've always kind of viewed that stuff. So it's really interesting to me because like this, like all the stories from Star Wars, we're finally learning like, oh, none of that was true. Because the I Love You I Know, for years, people were like, oh, no, what happened was Carrie Fisher kept messing up her lines. Harrison Ford got so mad, so he just said, I know, which is not what happened at all.
Oh, yeah, or the things online saying it was he was asked to improv, and then he completely improv. And it's like, no, these are artists, and they had a discussion, and then they figured it out. And it's like a game of, you know, the game of telephone. You ever play that as a kid? It's completely like that. You get one little thing, one person misinterprets it and spreads it on and spreads it on, and then it snowballs and it becomes something that it isn't. And that can also happen with rumors and not wanting things to get out. Mm-hmm. Something that sort of parallels The Force Awakens, which was a lot harder. I mean, they were like delivered the script and the person waited outside the door and then took it away, or it was on like special pages. I know some scripts are printed like on, you know, really dark red.
No, they're printed with their names and stuff on them.
Well, yeah, that happens with audition sides as well.
So then if any of it gets leaked, that they know exactly who did it.
Yeah, but a lot of the actors also can't keep it. But what Mark Hamill said was that they wouldn't even put their names on the call sheet. And the call sheet, everybody, who people don't know, is like, okay, here's a list of who's going to be on set today and what time they're coming and who's picking them up. And it's all this stuff for production is aware. Everyone had a number. So he would be like, I look at the sheet and I wasn't sure who I was working with sometimes because I didn't know their number. They didn't go that far in Jedi, but they did give people, I think, are easy to guess names. But Carrie was Caroline.
Why?
Mark was Martin and Harrison was Harry. Now, I would have guessed all of these. I guess because it's before the internet. Although they did film a chunk of it in the United States, and when they
didn't they? Oh no, they based. Never mind. Continue. Oh. The trees I only know this because of Parks and Recreation.
Oh, what?
But the trees, the redwoods in San Francisco, are what George Lucas used to base the Ewok planet off of, because Ben Wyatt walks through them.
Oh no.
And he goes, oh my God. And Leslie Knope's like, when he goes, these are the redwoods that George Lucas used to pace the forest moon of Endor off of. And it was like him walking through the trees, flipping out. And it was the most me that show has ever been.
Well, Peter Mayhew was told not to wander off because it was Bigfoot country. Ah. And they were afraid he might get shot. He thought that was hilarious.
Peter Mayhew dies on the set of Return of the Jedi.
Oops. People did find them, particularly when they did Jabba's barge. And one of my favorite things that I found was they said that Harrison Ford's fans were particularly annoying because they kept shrieking. Looking for their favorite actor. Yeah, I know. It's like, yeah, that's us.
I don't think I've ever shrieked.
No, I mean,
I've gotten like nervous.
When I say us, I use quotes. I mean that the Harrison Ford fandom is very vocal.
Yeah.
It is your brand, Rachel.
I am always on brand.
Including today, she's wearing her Last Crusade shirt.
I am. I'm always on brand. I did tweet that last night that I'm always on brand. And so I went to watch The Princess Diaries and realized that the only one I own is The Princess Diaries to a Royal Engagement starring Chris Pine.
Shocker.
So I'm always on brand because I only own movies in a franchise that have my favorites in them.
That's true. And one last thing that I didn't say was they did actually have a code name for this particular movie. It was called Blue Harvest.
Okay, see, that makes more sense than like Space Bears.
Space Bears, I like Space Bears. It's cute. It's funny.
It's clear they're filming Star Wars.
That's true. Well, here's the thing
like
about the
anything that you put space, it's like, okay, so that's it's either true. Star Trek or Star but Wars, which one is it?
The thing about Blue Harvest was all of the logos that they put up are in the Star Wars font. And I'm like, okay, I would have guessed that. Like, it was almost like they did it for their own amusement. Like, people are going to figure it out. We'll just call it this.
I think it's so weird when they do that because, like, they do that for Quantico. Because I was walking down the street one day and in New York and they had their, like, food truck out.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was going to just steal food from the food truck. And I was walking through and the one guy was sitting on a truck and I was like, what is this show? Like, I tried to, like, look it up and see what it was because I like to see what's filming.
Yeah, I do that too.
And he was like, oh, it's Quantico. It was a code name. We just tell people if they ask.
Is Quantico that big of a hit?
No, that's why I was confused. I was like, why is Quantico, like people, and, like, the Bull films by my apartment, which I still have yet to see the guy from NCIS. Every day I look for him. But, it, like, that just says the Bull. And I think it's also because, like, that's kind of a studio that they film in. Like, it's weird. But
oh, yeah, there are a lot of... I've gone to auditions, like, around near your house and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, like, there's, like, a... It's, like, a studio, but they... yeah, like, I don't get it. I mean, maybe there are crazy people who, like, go stalk the sets, but, like...
It could be, like, maybe someone particularly... J-Lo kept filming her show. I think it's called Blue Shield.
Shades of Blue.
Shades of Blue. What's wrong with me?
My mom watches it.
Please cast me. they film in front of my house a lot. In fact, there was one night where I had to stay up a little bit longer than I would have wanted to because her trailer was outside my door. And every time she got into the trailer, people would scream. And I was like, all right, we got it. She's in there. I want to sleep.
That's dumb.
So should we talk about Warwick Davis since he is your favorite Ewok?
Yes, and I also love Warwick Davis. He's in Harry Potter.
He's fantastic. And have you seen his UK show, Life is Short? It's written by Ricky Gervais, and it's...
Oh, God. If it's written by Ricky Gervais, it's probably, like, insane.
It's so funny. And, in fact, that's the only sort of criticism I would say is that when he speaks, it's so obviously Ricky Gervais' speech pattern and the way he does comedy.
I like the way you say his last name.
Gervais? Am I saying it wrong?
Yes.
What is it?
Ricky Gervais.
Oh, I'm just emphasizing. Okay, I'm emphasizing the end.
But it's
in
just
a way.
Gervais.
But that's like people who say Eddie Izzard and Eddie Izzard. Like, yeah, it's just
Eddie
a pronunciation
Izzard, it?
Thing. It's also could be.
You and I are just like, you're pronouncing things completely different from each other today.
He doesn't care, honestly. That's the way I'd heard it, I guess. Okay, I'm wrong. I don't know. We'll have to ask Ricky
Gervais.
Gervais. Oh my God. I think it's an accent thing. It's probably my Jersey accent. But anyway, he plays a very conceited, kind of the same sort of character he's been playing. If anyone watched any of the interviews from Star Wars Celebration, sort of that pompous, like, oh, I'm fantastic because I was in Star Wars kind of funny thing, which is what, you know, Ricky likes to write about, which is sort of this pompous sort of character. And then the world sort of, you know, slaps him in the face. Like, he gets invited to a wedding. And then he gets there and they're like, no, it's a Star Wars wedding. You have to put on the teddy bear outfit.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's really funny.
Listen, he's Professor Flitwick.
He's in a lot of stuff.
He's Professor Flitwick.
He's also in...
Doctor Who.
Yes, he's also in Doctor Who. He's sort of a stalwart. And apparently, skipping ahead to Force Awakens, he wasn't supposed to be in it, but his daughter was in it and he kept dropping her off on set. And they were like, you know, you maybe...
Is
maybe
his daughter
could be
also
in it.
A little person?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
His whole family is.
Oh, that's cool.
But the thing that I didn't realize, oh, actually, yeah, and he named his son Harrison.
Oh, that's nice.
I know. I thought it was sweet.
I don't know why that made me think of, like, do you remember that? I think it was Seinfeld, where it was like, there was a little person, but her son was like 6 foot something.
Well, that happens a lot.
Yeah,
I was
but
actually
wasn't that
surprised.
A Seinfeld episode?
I think it probably was. I was surprised, actually, that his entire family. I mean, I don't know the logistics and the genetics, but, like, it's not as uncommon as you would think that for, you know,
no,
a different
it's not.
Size
That's
family.
Why Punnett squares. I
what?
Took AP bio. Like, oh. You do Punnett squares. You can figure out, like, the probability of, like, what color eyes you have or the probability you're going to get this
gotcha.
Disease and stuff like that. So when you think about it, like, with little people, say... They have the person that would make them a little person or the person, the gene that would make them a little person. But then they also have like the recessive gene for it. So that means if they marry somebody else who has that recessive gene, they have a 1 in 4 probability that their kid will not be a little person because they have 2 of the dominant genes.
Okay.
And then 2 of the recessive genes, they have a probability that their kid won't be a little person.
Well, I didn't realize he was only 12.
Really? When he did this?
Yeah. He was 12 years old. It was his first movie. His grandmother heard an announcement on the radio that they were looking for little people for this new Star Wars movie. I'm sure they didn't call them that at the time. Is that why you're giving me that look?
No, I'm giving you that look just because it makes me shake my head.
Why?
It was a radio announcement looking for little people.
It was the 70s. Well, it was the early 80s. I'm sorry. It was a long time ago. But yeah, it was his first movie. He was 12. He and Carrie Fisher sort of, you know, really, you know, took him under her wing. She'd always ask him if he was okay. Probably because a lot of people kept passing out in those outfits in the heat.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Didn't they film that in like the jungle or something?
Somewhere in the United States. I actually don't have that information among my myriad of information here. But he'd always ask for milk and cookies. And then I wanted to read, he wrote the sweetest letter to George Lucas when he was done. And
oh,
I wanted to read it.
Okay, cool.
Okay, I'm going to try to do, I haven't done my British accent in
just
a while.
Just read it normal.
No, I want to do an accent.
Wait, this is a task. You read half in your British accent, and then I'll read half in my British accent.
Okay, that's a good idea. Okay, we'll do that. Okay. All right. And it's probably going to sound more like Oliver Twist, but okay. Dear Mr. Lucas.
Can I have another?
Yeah. It's got a tone to it. And again, I have not done this in a while, but I am also doing it for comic effect. My name's Warwick, and I hope you remember me. I helped you make the new Star Wars film. Oh, that was bad. I helped you make the new Star Wars film last year. I hear that your film is... Oh, fuck you.
Oh, my God. This is so funny. I can't continue.
I hear that your film is being released in this country on June 2nd, and that a few of the toy shops in London have some of the new figures. I hope... Notice how I'm also going high? Because he's like, he's a young kid.
Okay. You're developing
I'm doing
character.
A bit. Let
You're
me do it.
Developing the character of Warwick Davis.
I am. I'm creating this character. Okay. In London. Oh, shit. Fuck.
I'm just going to make mine as accurate to a British accent as I possibly can.
Yeah, okay. I hope this is not too rude of me to ask you, but wouldn't it be possible for you to send me the very latest figures and walkers? Page
I feel
two.
Like I'm missing a word.
Oh, wait, here, wait. Is that it?
Yeah. Okay, let me prepare. I'm doing just a real British accent.
Ladies
not
and gentlemen, Rachel's British accent, unlike
Lauren's
my fake
thing.
One.
Okay.
I was doing Oliver Twist.
I was hoping very much that there will maybe an Ewok or Jabba the Hutt. I did enjoy myself with you and the members of the film unit, and keep remembering what a terrific. What a terrific, experience it was. Hoping to meet you again very soon. Kindest regards, Warwick.
That was adorable.
I have mastered my British accent from the time I was 5 on.
I haven't worked on mine in a long time. I used to watch tons of Emma Thompson movies, and I just haven't worked on it in a while. But I also was trying to be funny.
Well, my one teacher used to hate me in college because he would be like, here's the standard British. And I'm like, no one talks like that.
Oh, yes.
Not one single... I was like, that's the problem with Americans doing accent is we're taught to do like the standard, like perfect. I'm like, no one does
it's
that.
It's called BBC English. BBC. Yeah. And no one does it over there really. I mean, maybe some of the people on telly, but like, I feel like more and more you're hearing actual people's unique actual accents.
Well, yeah. That's why I kind of like when I do it, like I'm going to read, here's how we're... delineating.
Well, you want to move on to that?
Reading something that you wrote in what we're going to talk about.
Oh, because I have one more thing. I have two more things about Warwick before we move on that I think are really great. The scene where he hugs Han's leg.
Oh, that's my favorite.
He totally just did that. And he said that Harrison's like look was real.
Did I ever tell you the fever dream I had about that scene?
No, but now you should tell us.
So this fall I had like a really bad fever for like 2 days. And it wasn't like a high fever or anything like that. It was probably like 100, but I was just laying on my couch and I had just taken Sudafed and I came home from work early. I was like doped up on Sudafed and like cold medicine. And I was laying on my couch watching Return of the Jedi. And I had a dream that this is why I think I bought the Wicket doll, that Wicket was like grabbed his leg and looked at me, and I was like, yeah, I feel that. And he goes, it's nice. Like I like had a conversation with the Ewok, and then I didn't realize it was weird until the next day. I went to work and was telling someone, oh yeah, like I just went home and watched Return of the Jedi, and then remembered what happened and was like, wait, hold on, I think I had a fever dream about the Ewoks. My coworker was like, what are you talking about? And just had to explain the whole conversation I had with Wicket to my coworker.
That's weird because in doing my research before I went to bed, I had a dream that Harrison Ford called me.
That's weird.
But he was definitely ill. I think he had like malaria.
So you're killing Harrison Ford.
He had like malaria or something. And mm-hmm. for some reason he called me and he was delirious and we spoke.
And then he died?
No, he did not die. But I was like, oh God, now I'm dreaming the research.
I knew I was gone the other day because I had a dream that I actually got my wish and went on a date with Chris Pine. Me and Chris Pine were talking.
I'm surprised you don't daydream that all the time.
I do, but this was like a dream. I woke up and was like, no. It was great.
So should we talk about Leia and the Hutt Slayer outfit slash, because that's what I'm calling it now, not calling it slave bikini?
Again, I feel like that has been talked about to the point where like I'm tired of it.
Well, I have some new information because I would like to focus on the fact that it's all the director's fault.
Are we talking about Lord Farquaad?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, I'm not really sure how to pronounce his name, and Rachel just doesn't want to say his name.
Well, no. What happened was she spelled out his name, and it said it looked like McQuad or something like that. And so I saw the Q-U-A-R-D, and I was like, Lord Farquaad.
I don't think that's how you spell it, and that's how I spell it.
Well, whatever. His name is Lord Farquaad.
Which is fine with me, because he's the whole reason that she's in that outfit. I mean, obviously it wasn't just his idea completely, but there is some original drafts, and I can link it on, eventually when we have a website and on our Tumblr and social media for people. But like Luke and Lando and everybody, they go off and they try to save Han. Leia is a general and she's commanding troops and she goes on the planet and she's doing like awesome stuff as opposed to becoming the Barbie bikini. Doll of the Ewoks and the slave bikini. And it was so interesting because they had sort of back to back in this book. By the way, people had asked also for Empire Strikes Back, what book I read. And I've been reading the making of series by J.W. And hopefully I say this right, Rinzeller. And he also did a series on Indy, which I haven't had a chance to read yet. So definitely check these out. And they have some drafts in them as well. But they had this sort of back to back thing of things that Carrie was saying that she really needed from her character and him going, oh, I couldn't agree more. She needed to be more feminine. And obviously not even getting what she's saying, where she's going, you know, some people think that my character was a bitch. I she doesn't have any sort of emotion about what happened to her. You know, can she have a breakdown? Can she have a drinking problem? Something that, you know, she's lost her boyfriend, her family, all these terrible things.
Make her an actual character.
Yeah, why doesn't she, which you talked about with Empire a little bit, why doesn't she just be like, hey guys, I'm going to go get my hair done. And he saw that as like, oh yeah, she was a boy in girl's clothing. And he apparently hated all her outfits in Empire, which women love. I love her outfit in Cloud City. I love her outfit at Hoth. I love every single outfit in Empire Strikes Back. And it's just so interesting as a contrast is that you speak to every woman who goes, or every girl, I love those outfits. And he's like, hated them all. I liked when she was a doll-like creature in Star Wars.
That's the thing. Okay.
Well, it's interesting because we're getting into the 80s, and I feel like the 70s had a lot of really strong, powerful sort of feminist women, and then the 80s, we got a little bit of a backlash, I wonder.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, and this is the problem with both Star Wars and Star Trek, and my mm-hmm. brother, I listened to him say it, and I agree with him, and it made me realize how terrible it was that I agreed with him, was we were rewatching Star Trek before we went and saw Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying how much he didn't like Uhura because Uhura in the new movies wasn't as much like Uhura in the original TV show.
Okay, which I don't know much about.
And Uhura in the original TV show is amazing. Like I told Lauren when I saw her that Nichelle Nichols is
awesome.
Is going to be at Comic-Con with Carrie Fisher. So I'm going to be spending all my money to get pictures with Nichelle Nichols and Carrie Fisher. My two feminist icons. But the problem is, I like agreed with him. I was like, yeah, blah, 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 blah. But I like don't like that I felt that way because all it was Uhura being strong and being like, no, I'm not doing this. And that's what Leia was in Empire. she like, yeah, she had her moment where she was like, oh, I'm in love with the boy, but she was strong and was like, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna this way.
I love her in Empire.
Yeah. And then like, it's so hard to like form and not. Well, like it made me really upset that I felt that way. Like, and I agreed with my brother.
But can't they be two separate things, that you want her to be a more modern, in a modern context character, but also you appreciate who she was and wanted to be true in canon?
Well, no, the reason it is upsetting is because like these series like Star Trek and Star Wars lend their women to that. Like Simon Pegg, hands down, like, thank you, Jesus, for Simon Pegg, because he made it to where Uhura and beyond, Uhura was like a badass. She saved everybody, mm-hmm. but she also was like true to Uhura and like was like intelligent and smart and caring and like using her linguistics to like get them through this thing, which JJ kind of didn't give us in the first two Star Treks. Mm-hmm. And JJ did the same thing with Leia. In my opinion, in The Force Awakens, Leia kind of was like,
be more.
It was not saying JJ did what Simon did. I'm saying JJ did what JJ did to Uhura. Like JJ Abrams kind of was like,
I'm going to take
this one facet of them. And that's going to be like the main thing, which I was like, cool. Great. JJ, like, thank you for giving us this reboot. However, that's not, you're taking one aspect of a character and not, because he focused on like certain, like.
Can I add something on that though?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I agree with you, but also I think, and Carrie Fisher would say it herself, is that acting is not necessarily her first talent.
But that's it. But that's, so that's character writing. That's not
what
she did.
I always like to sort of look at the benefit of the doubt and look at things. And in a lot of the research that I came up with, for example, like in Jedi, Carrie hates what she did on the bridge. In Empire, which I don't think we talked about, was she was definitely afraid of the two scenes where she had to show any kind of emotion because it wasn't what she felt comfortable with.
Well, yeah, that's fine. But that's, I'm pointing out that it's the men who are controlling these series.
Okay.
In my opinion. And they're like making these men characters very fully fleshed out, but then they see one aspect of these women characters and they don't see the full woman character.
Absolutely.
And that's Gene Roddenberry did with Uhura in the beginning. And it was JJ who kind of like limited her down to one facet. And then Simon Pegg built her back up into this character that she was in the original series. And then with Star Wars, it's like JJ took the one idea of Leia, like, oh, we're not going to focus on the fact that she was this sex icon, that she was this, whatever Leia was, come Return of the Jedi. We're going to focus on, oh, she's a general, but that's all she was. Like, we didn't even get to really see her be like,
I feel like
the wife
other,
and the mother, there should have been that. There should have been one scene that was the wife, mother scene.
Yeah, I feel like maybe we'll get some more of that later. I think that there are other factors. And I think in a movie where you have someone like Rey to say that he was being, are you saying he was being sexist?
No,
JJ?
I'm saying I'm saying that they take one facet of the female character and they like expound upon that facet rather than taking the full character and realizing it.
Okay. And
that's
and I get
part
that.
Of the problem with
I don't
Suicide
necessarily
Squad
think in,
2.
Which I haven't seen Suicide Squad.
But that's the whole that's like the whole group of them. That's not just like a female character. But I'm saying with these movies, it's like they took this character that was like for their that time was like insanely I can't think of the word. Not profound, but like it was ahead of the curve, basically. Like Leia and Uhura were these two characters. You're like, wow, like these women are kicking ass and being awesome at it, which back in the 70s and 80s was not a thing. Like that wasn't what was important.
Yeah, and we've definitely come a long way, and you can see sort of the strides. And I've talked about before, like Rey just meant so much to me in this sort of change in character, and knowing what Carrie went through on this movie. On Force Awakens, having not acted in a long time, and I'm taking these from Carrie's words. I love Carrie Fisher. I'm not disparaging her. These are things that she has said, that those are other factors as opposed to, because I saw lots of layers in Rey. But that also could have to do with Daisy Ridley's performance.
Yeah, I'm not saying anything about Rey. I'm saying established characters is the problem.
But I'm saying in a movie that has both those characters. And it can be hard to take an established character and make it your own as well. But I feel like there's more coming up, and I feel like there's more that had to be taken into consideration when it came to Leia in that movie.
It's just one of those things where like I see how they take Han. You see how they took Kirk and Spock, and it's like you can expound upon them, but you're not expounding upon like the women characters. I feel like there's still a lot we need to do.
That is true.
And
that's that is true.
Jedi kind of ruined that, and that's why like it took 3 movies for them to get to Uhura being actually
well.
Uhura.
Going back to Jedi, what's so interesting to me is reading all this stuff and then also prepping Temple of Doom is, you know, it's sort of interesting to me that the Leia that we get that they filmed in the 70s is very different from the one that we get from the 80s. And the things that happened with this outfit, I mean, they had to form it to her body. It was, she lost some weight, so it was coming off of her. Every take, she's exposed to all these people on set. Like, one of my favorite things that Carrie Fisher joked about was that she once saw a doll that was like 360. It was like laying on a thing, and that when it spun, you could see all the way to Florida. And it just sort of, the whole thing that I read about it, particularly this director being like, oh yeah, I totally get what you want. And then like going in like the completely, you know, opposite direction.
Well, yeah, that's the point I was trying to make, that they don't understand how to address these characters.
We've come such a long way in comparison to the way that Carrie Fisher was treated on regarding this particular scene and this particular outfit. And I love the fact that the book Bloodline... have you finished it yet?
No.
Okay.
I started All the Light We Cannot See.
Well, I don't think I'm giving anything away because it's sort of out there, but that Claudia Gray, that's her name,
yes.
Right? She took from Tumblr this idea of people calling her the Hut Slayer as opposed to, or the Hut Slayer outfit as opposed to Slave Leia outfit, and she took it into canon, and that is what the underworld call Leia, the Hut Slayer. And I just think that's awesome. And sort of, you know,
taking it
back.
Oh, I did get to that part. That's like in the very beginning.
Okay. I didn't know how far into it you were.
I'm a pretty good way, but then I kept seeing All the Light We Cannot See. Like, everyone kept reading it around me.
Yeah, yeah.
And it got to the point where I was like, if I don't read this book, I'm going to go crazy because everyone keeps reading it. And so I bought it.
Well, one of my favorite stories, actually, it's a small thing about the outfit, was that Carrie took Penny Marshall with her for her first fitting. Because I don't know if anyone knows, they're really good friends. I didn't realize that they were both dating Simon and Garfunkel, and that's how they knew each other.
Yeah.
But anyway, and you know,
they're dating the band.
Yeah.
Simon and Garfunkel.
They were, and that's how they stayed friends.
Not,
but
not Art Garfunkel and Paul Simon. They're dating just Simon and Garfunkel.
Yes, yes.
The
just that word is just one particular thing. But it's sort of kind of wonderful that like their friendship has stayed over this time, and you know, the men come and go. But she took her with her, and the costume designer said, "Well, you have to put on this cold wax bra first, so that the outfit will adhere to your chest." And apparently Penny Marshall just like looked at him with like the worst eyes, like, really? This is what's happening? And was not very happy about the whole thing. I kind of wonder if she took Penny with her, like, I have to try this thing on, like, I don't want to go by myself.
Yeah. I mean, it's still happening today.
Yeah. A lot of stuff happened in that scene. Billy Dee Williams burned himself a bit with some of the pyrotechnics when he was being shot at. Carrie Fisher referred to the whole set as the sand vagina.
The sand vagina?
Yeah. I see what she sees.
I guess.
I thought it was funny.
I thought it looked like the flower from Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Oh, and then this was one of my favorite things, just for, I guess, funny parts. Luke was going to have a girlfriend at one point when they were like, oh, well, I guess now that, you know.
I wonder if that's how Mara Jade.
I was thinking about that, actually. I don't know much about that particular part of the Legends history, but I know a lot about her. She sounds awesome.
Yeah, Mara Jade is... in the lore is Luke, or in the extended universe is Luke Skywalker.
But now it's considered Legends. It's not considered part of canon.
Which, stupid.
Well,
why can't it just be Janna and Jason? That storyline is great, and I would love to see that movie.
Here's the issue, is that then there's, I mean, they're mostly doing it, but then they don't have the sort of element of surprise, and they're confined to an idea that they can't go around. They're taking a lot of the ideas anyway. They just want to be able to sort of have the element of surprise.
But
that's
no
what I
think. No
one
cares about the element of surprise with Star Wars. Every single person
Every
who
movie.
Went into
you
it,
you ruin
though.
A movie if you take out the element of surprise. That's why I love spoilers, but they're terrible.
Hey, do you want to know a spoiler about Titanic? The ship crashes.
It's based on history. That's different.
No, that's the thing, though. That's like any World War II movie you go and see, you know what's going to happen. The Germans are going to lose. Hitler's going to kill himself. I'm
on Harrison's side. I think it ruins the enjoyment of the movie. And I think that it changes the expectation because there's no sort of build to it. But anyway, Mark Hamill was given literally a binder full of girlfriends, to quote a really old political joke, to pick out a girlfriend from. It was like this science fiction book of like, you know, just women in it. And like, pick out the kind of girlfriend you want.
I hate this so much.
Well, one last thing that I think we should talk about is how everyone thought that they were going to be nine. Like, that really surprised me. Nine movies that he was going to go off and do three more trilogy at the beginning and three more trilogy at the end.
Which is what's happening.
Which is happening now. And sort of, you know, I thought, okay, well, maybe he had an idea for the first three or it came about later. And there actually is an outline that someone found of the original, because I know people don't... Was I off mic there for a second? No, okay. So there's an outline of the original before Leia was Luke's sister. Because they actually ended up doing that because they got to the end and Lucas was tired. He just didn't want to do it anymore. He wanted to at least have a break. And originally, at the same time that Luke was training, this other girl was having the same sort of movie somewhere else, not knowing that she had a brother.
Why?
I do not know. And then what was going to happen in the last three, 8, 7, 8, 9, was Luke was going to turn dark at the end of Jedi, and this long-lost sister was going to come about and bring him to the light again.
So Jason and Jaina.
Yeah, pretty much. Do you want to read what was supposed to happen originally after Jedi?
Sure. Episode 7 was the third... The third trilogy was focusing on Luke's life as a Jedi with few details like panned out. So kind of the in-between between Jedi and Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 8, Luke's sister, not Leia, appears from another part of the galaxy. And episode 9 is the first appearance of the Emperor. But that doesn't make any sense. Oh,
well, this is very early.
So the Emperor wouldn't have been in.
Yeah, this was sort of, you know, kind of the original thing.
That doesn't make any sense.
And then episode 1 would be Origins of the Jedi Knights. Episode 2 would be the development of Obi-Wan. And then 3 would be the introduction and life of Vader. So it wasn't until 3 that was supposed to be. So that was sort of his original idea, which is, I just think, kind
this
of interesting.
This is why George Lucas should never plan anything.
I for one, am definitely one of the people who have, you know, not been so nice about George Lucas. But, like, these ideas that he's had, they come out fully formed, you know, for Raiders. He's a wonderful idea guy. And he even was arguing not to kill anyone in Jedi or Yoda. I mean, Harrison Ford jokes they didn't want to kill Han because it would be bad for merchandising. But everyone in these story meetings are like, you know, you gotta kill people to make this more interesting, to give it some dramatic pinning, to have sacrifice in the story. See, that's interesting. And so you have those people on one side, and then the audience is really more on Lucas's side, because he's like, no, I think you alienate people when you kill someone.
Yeah, J.K. Rowling. You alienate people when you kill people in your stuff. I'm still bitter. Sirius Black is dead.
Oh, you are? Okay.
I will never not be bitter about Sirius Black dying. And also, J.J. Abrams, I'm still bitter that you killed Han Solo.
Well, I think that his story's not over. Oh, you would love this. Full circle to J.K. and the lovely Harry Potter. But Alan Rickman auditioned for... Oh, God, I didn't even know what to say his name. Did they say his name in the movie and I just missed it? Moff Gerard? Is that how you say it? I'm sorry, I'm dyslexic. I can't say anything.
I don't even know where...
I don't think they say his name at the top. I don't think they say his name out loud. Or I just missed it.
Moff Gerard?
Yeah, Alan Rickman auditioned. He didn't get it.
Larry and the Big Chill?
Oh, that's a note for myself.
I was like, is he going to...
Larry Kasdan didn't think that he was going to be writing Jedi because he was now a writer-director. And The Big Chill eventually came out in September of 83, which was before... I know. And that was like a huge deal in movies of the time, in screenwriting. It's a classic movie if you haven't seen The Big Chill. And he was becoming a writer-director. Hadn't obviously come out yet, but this was his goal. And eventually he did Silverado and Grand Canyon and some really great stuff. So, but he was sort of encouraged to come back by Lucas as a favor. And get this, that original draft that I read actually had the scene in The Force Awakens when they come directly out of, oh my God, my brain, it's so hot in here. Hyperdrive or hyperspeed?
Hyperspeed.
Thank you. Onto the planet. He stole it from his own draft.
Aw.
Yeah. So maybe there'll be stuff in that draft that we can find. Yoda comes back to life at the end. Originally it was going to be Ben Kenobi, but then it was Yoda because Vader had come over to the light and now he could come into the real world. Larry Kasdan felt that the ending of what we saw was very wimpy. Oh, and you would appreciate this because you're going to get angry. George Lucas said that the building of the second Death Star is the MacGuffin in this.
That doesn't make any sense.
It's a little weird. He also brought up something really interesting, too, is that it's good to do something which he refers to as a time lock, which I feel actually is the Death Star, I guess, in a way, is that you build something that has an expiration date, a due date, so that your heroes have to get it done by this particular time. Because they're rebuilding the Death Star and they got to do, you know, until...
But... No. Well, kind of. It's like half the MacGuffin. Because the whole first part of the movie...
Well, I find the MacGuffin is really vague.
The whole first part of the movie is getting...
It's the...
Han.
Yeah, but it's an important part of the plot that drives the plot forward, but isn't necessarily the main focus. It's a crux. You need a crux of something to, you know, go after, things like that.
Yeah.
One thing I thought was really sweet, because we haven't really talked about Luke and his relationship with Han, or Mark Hamill's relationship with Harrison Ford, and he called him... probably my best friend that I've had in my life, and yet I never see him for months at a time. I thought that was really sweet. And that when, after he saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, he called him and he was like, that was really neat. That was really good. And he actually called him kid all the time. They added a couple of things after they were done with principal shooting. The line, I owe you kid. The funeral pile, the fire they added. And Han running out of the little base there before it blew up, which I thought was interesting. I'm shocked that he didn't go back. It's something I think I didn't mention with Empire, which was amazing and I think shows the kind of person he is with the whole, you know, every time a new DVD came out, there'd be a change on it. Is he's never satisfied, is when Empire was in the movies, he called and was like, hey, I want to shoot 3 more shots. Oh, you're kidding, right? No, we're going to... put 3 more shots in the movie. And they did at the end of the movie. I can't figure out which they are, but that seems to explain a lot about his personality.
Yeah, he's a dumbass. I like George Lucas has such good ideas and I get it. Also though, like, God, George.
There's a talent to having ideas though and knowing that that's what your talent is as opposed
but he
to
doesn't know
executing.
That's what his talent
as, opposed,
is.
As opposed to executing though, as those ideas. There's a difference.
Okay, he doesn't know that though. Or now he does, but he did not for years. Hence why we have the prequels.
Yes, well, we can... Eventually I'll see them and probably feel the same way. So the movie did really well, though. It
really?
Was the number one movie of the year. It was, at the time, the actual number one biggest weekend ever. And then I'm sure it got beaten by a lot of stuff. And everything you read sort of feels like, you know, the end of college. Like everyone sort of moved on and matured and they were all leaving and they all become friends with each other. In fact, the first day of filming, Melissa, who was married to Harrison Ford, or I guess it was his girlfriend at the time, I'm not sure. Yeah, they hadn't gotten married yet. Carrie Fisher and Harrison had all gone on vacation in Hawaii together. And then they arrived... on set. And when they got off the plane, Harrison Ford was actually in a wheelchair, which freaked some people out because he started having back problems and had back problems through most of the movie. And then when we get to Temple of Doom, we'll find out what happened with that. They even asked when he was hanging on the branch, you know, over the fire, like, hey, we can put something under you because your back's bothering you. And he was like, no, I should look like I'm in pain, which I think was not a smart thing to do.
I feel like he wants to die. In every story I hear about Harrison Ford, like he wants,
he's very adventurous. He's very adventurous, and he wants to do as many stunts as he possibly can. He wants to really make it look like, which I understand. Like you want the audience to believe that the character is really doing that, and then it also helps your acting. I also did mention when they were on location in the U.S., some girls actually found Carrie Fisher but didn't recognize her and asked her where Carrie Fisher was, and she put on a fake British accent.
She's so good at that.
Well, they believed her, which is pretty funny.
I'm just so excited to meet Carrie Fisher. I haven't decided if I want to do what shirt I want to wear.
You haven't decided? Well, you have some time.
Because I have my...
But it's coming up.
I know, I need to buy it. That's the problem. And I want to do... I think it'd be funny if I had the Boldly Go Away shirt on with the Starfleet symbol.
Oh, you were going to... You said
with
that,
with a picture
yeah.
with Carrie Fisher, because my brother would be so mad, and I would love it, because they made a Star Trek shirt meeting Carrie Fisher.
So is there anything about Jedi that we haven't discussed that you would like to add?
I mean, every time I ever talk about Jedi, I talk about how bad Harrison Ford is playing a blind person. Because he would, like... I talked about this when I had a web series... Where he looks directly at the person that he is talking to, despite the fact that he's blind.
I think he was just unhappy on set and wasn't putting too much effort into it.
Yeah, there's literally a part where Luke talks and he looks directly into Luke's eyes. And I'm like, you're blind. I know you can see figures, but you're looking, even a person who's mainly blind and can only see figures...
Yeah.
Still, their eyes aren't exactly looking straight into your eyes.
Well, I don't
sockets.
Think the director was really helping him because he was, kowtowing to Harrison the whole time, oh, he's so great and he can do all the stuff and being
Someone
mean.
Someone needed to tell him don't look at the person.
Being mean to Carrie. Carrie hated him. Mark always said he liked him, but I have a feeling that.
Mark's just nice.
He's nice, exactly. And he did not appreciate that this guy was being mean to his friends and he. But I think he probably was not getting a lot of... It's the Emperor's New Clothes thing. That happens with a lot of people. There's a documentary on George Lucas where that apparently happens. I think it's happening with Aaron Sorkin sometimes, is that you become so big that people are like, oh, yeah, this is great. Oh, you're acting. Oh, you look like you're blind. Yeah. And then doesn't actually, direct them. I've seen it with Meryl Streep. I've seen her be bad because the director was probably like, oh, well, I'm afraid to tell Meryl Streep what to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, that happens with everybody. I just saw Hell or High Water and it was fantastic. I loved it. But there were times,
great things about it.
But there were times where I couldn't understand Jeff Bridges because of
I hate that.
His accent was, which it's that's part of the character. But that was I feel like that was one of those moments where they're like, it's Jeff Bridges. Don't say anything to him. But I was like, but
you want
to
be directed as an actor.
I can't really understand him. I loved Hell or High Water. It's hands down. It's going to be nominated for Oscars. It's incredible.
Oh, great.
But there was moments where I was like, what? Did Jeff Bridges just say? Because I say this all the time. Him and my dad talk. Him and my dad are very, very similar. So that's why I love Jeff Bridges. But he, they do this thing where the side of their mouth kind of comes down when they talk. So because that's the first movie I ever saw that had Jeff Bridges in it. I remember asking my mom why my dad was in a movie. And she was what are you talking about?
That's my and uncle and Bridges. His grandson and Steven Spielberg. He looks like Steven Spielberg, and when Spielberg was on the cover of Time, he went, pop, pop.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
They both do this lip thing where it's it comes down halfway and their lips stick together. It's weird. But because he does that, when Jeff Bridges was talking in a Southern accent, there were parts where I had no idea what he was saying.
That's my dad watching Trainspotting. He's what?
Well, it's not even that I don't understand the accent. I understood Ben Foster and Chris Pine perfectly fine, but it was just Jeff Bridges every once in a while that I was like, it was very clear the director didn't want to be like, hey, lighten up on your accent in that part. Yeah. I can't hear you. They just let him do it. And so it sacrificed a little of that.
And actors want to be directed no matter how high of a stature they are. They welcome it. And then it's really sad to see. And I see sometimes with writers where people go, oh, that's a great idea. No one is questioning them. No one is going, well, actually I have a better idea or maybe this should work. They're just taking all of their ideas and not working as a collaborative effort.
Because that's the mindset of a genius. It's if you label someone as a genius and then you can't kind of retract that title. So it's you give them an Oscar and you say, oh, they're a genius, they're amazing, they're wonderful. You can't then direct them in the eyes of a director. You're well, they won an Oscar, so they know what they're doing. But in reality, it's a collaborative effort.
Exactly.
So it's a mix of for instance, just because I was talking about him, for instance, look at Crazy Heart. Crazy Heart is amazing and heartfelt and heartbreaking, but it was an effort of the author of the book, the director, Jeff Bridges, the music, whoever wrote all the music for Crazy Heart. It was an effort of all these different people. So then when it comes down to it, it's not just up to Jeff Bridges. It's up to all these different people. And so for, like, I'm using Jeff Bridges as an example, but he still is probably going to get nominated and should win an Oscar for Hell or High Water. Like, he's incredible.
Well, it wasn't like you couldn't understand everything he was saying.
No, like, but that was just still, the freshest example in my mind. It was like the director could have been like, hey, lighten up, but clearly, like,
well, I think that's something that a lot of people, even people in the business, which surprised me, don't understand is how collaborative it is. I mean, I won't say his name, but although he won't care because he puts it on Facebook, but I have a friend of mine who is an actor and he doesn't believe you should give money to bad movies. So he watches them beforehand. I think we can all guess how. And then pays money if they're good because it's terrible that people would make bad movies. And I went, no one goes in to make a bad movie. And I went through all the different aspects and used examples, particularly from Star Wars, about how things were changed, how this happened, well, something was vetoed, and that no one goes in to make a bad movie. It's not
someone
their fault.
Thought it was good. Like somewhere down the line, someone thought that was a good movie.
Sometimes it can be the edit. I mean, George Lucas for Jedi took over the edit from the director because he didn't like what he was doing. Sometimes it's the other way around. Like, your performance can be completely done through the editing process because you have no control. Like, it's a collaborative effort, and no one goes in saying, I'm going to make a bad movie.
I mean, like, and then there's also the idea of, like, the idea of a bad movie is kind of stupid to me because it's somebody somewhere is going to love that movie. There are so many bad movies that people are like, that movie's terrible. Why do you love it? And I just think it's like one of the fun, like the Horrible Bosses movies, I think are the funniest movies that ever existed. Anchorman and like all that. And I loved Nacho Libre when that movie came out and everyone I knew hated it. And it's like, there's somewhere, someone somewhere that's going to find whatever you put out there interesting and intriguing, whether the critics do or don't
The critics did not like this
different movie
at all.
Yeah, like, exactly. And this is...
They said none of the characters changed, which I agree with. I don't know about you. That Leia was just made this sort of, you know, whimsical damsel in distress, which I agree with. I actually agree with all the critics on Jedi.
Again, sorry. That's like what I was bringing back to, like, what I was saying earlier about JJ and then Lord Farquaad, is they take, like, aspects of these female characters and they don't know what to do with them. And so then they make them these, like, cardboard cutouts of these characters rather than, like, what they... Like, from Empire, they could have really... expounded upon Leia and made her this more well-rounded character, but instead they regressed her back.
Yeah.
And I think it's because we're still, well, we have Kathleen Kennedy, but she's casting, isn't she? Or she's producer.
Kathleen Kennedy runs Lucasfilms.
No. Oh, okay. But she's not writing anything.
She's in on the story meetings.
Yeah. But I feel like now in the next one, Leia's going to have a little bit more to do, and
I think that there's things that we don't know that they had to save, but I would love to go back to, if you don't mind, because we have already talked about this, but I just had this sort of idea as we were talking beforehand, is that it also goes back to perspective, even the How I Met Your Mother thing. You love Jedi, and because you saw it as a child, it means something to you. I saw Jedi, and I don't love it as much as Empire, but still, it's a perspective thing. There's also things like the prequels. I was an adult when the prequels came out, so I don't have the same affinity for them that a lot of people do that I didn't know about who love them because it's from their childhood.
Yeah.
Then you also have things like movies that are before its time. I am a huge fan of the movie Clue. I am obsessed with it. I'm going to a costume party. I have dressed up for several fundraiser and events just for Clue. I love it. Mm-hmm. You could think like, oh, when I was a kid, I just thought it was funny. No, it's a brilliant and it's a funny movie. And when I was very young, a lot of people would say, oh, why do you like that movie? And now that I feel like people around our age, so to speak, are getting older and you're hearing more about, oh, no, I love the prequels. Or no, Clue is an amazing movie. To make it full circle, Neil Patrick Harris loves Clue. It was good. It was before its time.
Well, but I think that it also depends on the person. Like for me, I like Clue the movie because I was in Clue the musical when I was in high school.
Oh, you were? Which is very different from the movie.
Yeah, and so we watched the movie as like a group, and so it's like I remember watching Clue because we watched together and we did all this stuff.
Well, I love the board game. It was a big part of my life, and that's why I saw the movie originally because I was like, I love the board game, but the board game is nothing like this amazing farce.
Yeah, no. And even the musical, like, I was Mrs. White, and I had to speak in this terrible Cockney accent.
Isn't she the maid in that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had to do... what was the song? Oh, it was like, your life is a bowl of cherries when all the pieces fit. And it was so terrible. It was this terrible Cockney accent. But it was like, it's any kind of thing where it's like, if you have memories behind
Yeah.
It has, seeing something it has a cultural significance. Yeah.
So nothing can be discounted, I think. If you enjoy it and I don't, we're going to talk about Temple of Doom next week. I have a much different experience of Temple of Doom than you do. Mm-hmm. It's going to be kind of this reverse thing. So very quickly, I just want to thank some of our sponsors who are donating the prizes that you can win. You can also win them by answering a trivia question and getting a bigger prize. As I mentioned in the last episode, we are going to be extending our summer contest to the official end of summer, which is September 22nd, because we're going to be pre-recording as we are doing right now. You can go on our Tumblr and eventually our website and answer a trivia question about this episode or the episode that's currently happening and win a bunch of prizes. But you can also win some small prizes by following us on social media. We are on Tumblr as well as Facebook and Instagram.
Twitter.
Well, that's a different one, though. We're at the Fordcast Podcast, but on Twitter, we're at the Fordcast PC because it's less characters and it helps. So, for example, we have the amazing J-Lane Design. You can find them at jlanedesign.com. She has these awesome Rey and Leia. We have these stickers of Han Solo, this beautiful outline. You can get a Blade Runner Decker sticker. J. Terrell 76 on Redbubble. Thank you so much, guys. We'll be adding, you know, different people as you know we go along. Mentioning them on air, I can't see. Echo Music has these wonderful "Never Tell Me the Odds" stickers with a little sort of, you know, picture of Han, and he has a little series. Well, a little series, but it's a web series. They're MW Entertainment, Minimum Wage Entertainment, has The Kid Who Loved Indiana Jones. So you should definitely check that out. You can find us on social media. I am at Lauren Milberger at Twitter. You are everywhere else.
I am Rachel Leishman on Twitter, Rachel _ Leishman on Instagram, and Rach Solo on Tumblr.
Thank you for all your reviews and notes and kind thoughts. It really makes us see that we should keep doing this.
To the person it took me like a week to respond to.
But that you're enjoying it as much as we are. And if you are enjoying the show, we want the show to be brought to more people. And the best way to do that is to go on iTunes. Be sure to put a nickname under your profile and rate and review us. Because the more rates and reviews we have, the more iTunes will promote us to other people. It's hot in here. I need to take a drink of water.
Lauren's just documenting every single thing she does.
I do, because I'm slurring my words and apparently like not saying them correctly. It's iTunes, iTunes, iTunes.
Hi, welcome back to Sweaty Balls.
NPR at its best.
NPR at its best. But yeah, so follow us on social media, rate, review, subscribe, like, tweet, twat. Whatever else you want to do.
And send us any of your theories or your thoughts or topics you want us to talk about.
Send me asks on Tumblr.
And continue coming, going through the full Ford with us.
And yeah, and if to just help my campaign, if anyone knows Chris Pine, I would like to go on a date with him. You can help me out.
Well, that's just a given.
You can help me out. I hate me.
So yeah, so we'll see you in 2 weeks with Temple of Doom as we power through the 1980s.
I feel like that's what everyone did.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, and until next time.
Bye.
Bye.